Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 122, entitled, How to Use Persuasion, Influence, and Mind Control to Get Anything You Want, I chat with Chase Hughes. Chase Hughes is a world-renowned behavioral scientist and the number one body language expert in the country. He talks today about persuasion, influence, and even using real-life mind control to get others to do what you want. He shares with us his innovative techniques and tactics for manipulating others to get them to do whatever we want. I know it sounds crazy, but this stuff is real, and Chase talks all about how he's been doing it for years. Both professionally, he works with high-level government agencies, and personally, getting things like free coffees whenever he goes to the coffee shop. If you're wondering how you can influence and persuade others to the point of getting them to do just about anything you want them to do, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Chase Hughes from EllipsisBehavior.com. Chase, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Justin, it's good to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Chase, I mentioned in the intro a moment ago just a couple of things about what you do. Can you just describe quickly? I know we can't get into, you know, the specifics on some of these topics or questions that I may bring up. And if I do bring up anything that is kind of, you know, off limits, just feel free to shut me right down. I know some of this is top secret, but can you just give our listeners, you know, a quick little background or introduction about some of the work you do now and kind of how you got into that?
Sure. Nowadays, we develop behavior products, and we try to apply behavior science on a tactical level. And this can range from teaching someone attraction skills to profiling, identifying someone's fears and weaknesses and insecurities and how to exploit those. And it goes all the way to brainwashing and what a lot of people would call mind control.
Cool. And so, I mean, what are some of the, I guess, like techniques or tactics you're using, you know, typically when you're doing some of this like mind control stuff?
It depends on how deep you're talking about. There's like, I would say on one end of mind control, I would convince you to loan me $20. And at the other end, I'd convince you to go walk in front of a bus that's moving.
Wow.
So there's some different techniques, but they all involve a tremendous deal of body language reading. And I'm not talking body language reading on a normal level. I'm talking somebody who's got a metaphorical graduate degree in body language. Like they've really given it some thought. And then there's a lot of profiling that goes into it. And there are a lot of linguistic techniques and a lot of people might be thinking NLP. And there's maybe a 5% of that involved there. But on top of that, there's a lot going on with your body, how often you blink, how often you breathe. And this is something we bring into the interrogation scenarios when we teach interrogators to get confessions a lot faster than they used to get them. And going all the way up to like the Manchurian candidate creation kind of stuff, some of the techniques, and we can dive into any one of these that sounds interesting to you, would be a whole lot of what we call entrainment. To where if I was programming someone to do this, and this Manchurian candidate thing is not something you can do conversationally. So it would involve hours and hours of me just rote memorization, me telling you to pick up your hand, put it down, turn your head to the left, turn it back, open your eyes, close your eyes. So just over and over these rote tasks to where, you know, I'm sure you've heard this before, like when you do something repeatedly, your brain kind of hardwires neurons to do that. Like tying your shoes would be impossible if your brain didn't kind of memorize the steps. So a lot of that involves kind of hardwiring the subject's brain to automatically comply with simple commands, and they get more advanced as they go up. And there's hypnosis involved. There's a whole lot of hypnosis involved. And there's something we call hypersuggestibility development. to where, based on the person's fears, their weaknesses, their insecurities, and you could use this for therapy if you wanted to the point where you've kind of mapped them out and you're using all of these techniques, not just in a regular, hey, I learned persuasion or I learned influence, but this is sharpened. It's been honed and sharpened to that person.
Cool, man. Yeah, I mean, a bunch of things kind of stick out, so I'm trying to figure out where I want to begin here. It's you know, all this stuff is so interesting to me. I guess we'll start actually with the hypnosis, because it's something I talk about a lot. When you're doing this kind of stuff, do you use like something like a rapid hypnosis, like induction? I've seen these like videos like on YouTube and other things, and I'm more familiar with like kind of the standard hypnosis or the generic kind of hypnosis, where it's like, you know, you listen to a hypnotist for 20-30 minutes and you can kind of reprogram different behaviors or emotions that you want to overcome or change. And, you know, sure. It's good for something like that. Like I've used it for anxiety problems or depression, confidence problems or issues and things like of that nature. But I've also seen like, you know, these crazy YouTube videos where a hypnotist is doing like this rapid induction thing, and you know he can snap his fingers and knock the person out in like a couple seconds after he like teaches them how to do it. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about here, or something like along those lines, where you can like literally tap into the brain and kind of turn it on and off when you want?
Sort of. I don't like using the term hypnosis only because it's hypnosis implies there's some agreement there. I'm a hypnotist. You want to be hypnotized, or you know that I'm trying to hypnotize you, and then something's going to happen. I think we use a lot of hypnotic principles and hypnotic language there, but a lot of this is done without your consent and without your awareness that it's happening. So there's no formal induction, and a lot of hypnotists I've seen tend to place this high priority on trance and like putting somebody in trance. And I could teach you to put someone in a conversational trance really quickly in less than a minute, but the trance doesn't guarantee suggestibility and compliance. So suggestibility and compliance are more important than a person going into trance, and that's where we develop. We use language, we use gesturing, breathing, or you're blinking. Everything is tailored to get that person to go through three phases in the first part of the interaction. And those three phases are focus, interest, and curiosity, in that order. And that creates a natural state for that person to start being more receptive to the quote, heavier commands that are going to come after that. So this is done to where somebody, you know, the age-old debate, can you be hypnotized against your will? And that is a preposterous question if you're talking about any kind of covert methodology, because like a metaphor I use pretty often is, Justin, would I be able to give you antibiotics against your will?
No,
because you'd fight it off, or you knew it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But if I put it in your food and you had no idea it was there, I gave it to you, but it wasn't against your will, because will implies there's a choice.
Okay, cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it.
So it's not whether or not you can be hypnotized against your will. It's whether or not you can be hypnotized without your consent or without your awareness. And that's what we teach. And I think, you know, when I was growing up kind of getting into this, I've been studying this for 17 years, a little over 17 years now. And I got all these books on persuasion and influence, and I thought I was going to learn some dangerous techniques. And I thought like, oh, well, I'm going to get all these skills that it says on the back of this book. And I'm sure you felt this before. Like you get a book that's got a great write-up. It's got great marketing, and you read through it. It's just like a whole book of information, and you get maybe like two paragraphs worth of good techniques out of it. And I was just tired of that. And towards the end, we started developing our own program with Ellipsis, to where I wanted a book that was just jam-packed with information. The book that we just released in February, the Ellipsis Manual, talks about behavior profiling, talks about body language, talks about identifying needs, weaknesses, and insecurities, how to exploit them, how to hypnotize someone, how to use all that language, all the way down into step-by-step, word-for-word script on how to create a mentor in Canada. I wanted a book that was dangerous, so I wound up making one.
Nice, man. We're going to put that in the show notes as well, the Ellipsis manual. So is this more of like self-taught kind of stuff that you've learned by, you know, reading NLP books or persuasion books, influence books, or is this more of something you learned like through your military training?
I think it's a little bit of both. I have spent way more than I should have on Amazon and seminars and stuff like that, and just reading a lot of books. But I've gotten some great training from Uncle Sam. And aside from that, I've been to several really great seminars, and I've stuck to this as just like a methodological study throughout my life. And I've taken great notes and done some serious research into this, going all the way back to like the MK Ultra stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with that, like the old CIA mind control conspiracy
from
stuff.
From the, what, 60s or something, or before that?
Yeah, it was 50s and 60s.
Okay.
And doing some research into that and actually discovering new information. And I was the person who discovered a lot of information that survived the classified document destruction order up at Colgate University. And that was Dr. George Estabrooks. He's the man in the 60s who invented the Manchurian Candidate procedure. So basically, he would just program an alter personality in an army officer and give this other personality a bunch of classified information, wake him back up and send him across enemy lines. And that way, if he got captured or tortured, that other personality wouldn't come out with all the classified information until they received the code word or whatever they set up to trigger that thing to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting, man. I love all the like the CIA stuff too, and all that, like, you know, delving into the secrets of the mind and kind of like, you know, what we're talking about here, of course.
And to answer the end of your question, I've done a tremendous amount of my own experiments here, and I've proven a lot of these methods, and they've been proven in the field. So basically, the Ellipsis manual was written on like a 2-sentence proposal. And I was teaching a seminar. This guy asked me, is there a program out there where I can convince a foreign national in less than 2 hours to commit treason and spy for the United States? So that is where the book came in, because there wasn't. I mean, there's a lot of programs that promise, like, you've seen the books out there, like convince anybody to do anything. And these books promise a lot. So we wrote the Ellipsis manual to be that, the dangerous book, to be an actual weapon, in hopes that people would use it for good. But that was the reason that we kind of started down that dangerous side of the house, so to speak.
So kind of walk me through the process here. Like, how do you, I mean, you talked a little about the focus, the interest, the curiosity, kind of like that's the initial stages of kind of, you know, starting this off. But where do you go from doing this kind of thing to then being able to say, well, how about we start simple? How do you, like, basically get someone to give you $20, and then, you know, obviously I think a little harder would be getting them to walk in front of a bus, right? Let's start with the $20 right. Example, I guess, first. Like, how do you get to that point as far as, like, you know, using these three little core principles in the beginning? Like, what's after that?
So after focus, interest, and curiosity, then you're going to start doing a ton of profiling. And you're going to profile them based on what we call a needs map. And it's just a little chart. It has just a couple of basic human needs on it. And it's in no way an academic paper on needs, but it's a list of basically fulcrum points or leverage points that most people have. So you figure out whether the person is driven by appreciation, acceptance, or approval on one side. And those are the three basics. And on the other side, you figure out whether they're driven by a need to be seen as powerful, a need to be seen as someone who's worthy of admiration, someone who seeks pity, someone who complains a lot, basically, or someone who wants to be valued for their intelligence. So based on those 7 criteria, you'd kind of pinpoint where they are on the scale, and you'd know all their leverage points. And there's a ton of different skills you can use. But you would start off with some basic rapport development by identifying which side of their body do they use when they gesture about good things and which side of their body they use when they talk about bad things. And usually people do have a preference. And we call that gestural hemispheric tendency. So you just watch for that in a conversation. So every time that person moves or interacts or starts breathing, you're gathering information that's going to shape the next method that's going to come after that. But I want to talk about one thing. I know you have mostly male listeners. Is that right? It's mostly men.
Yep.
One of the things that we discovered was a huge shortcoming with all of the other training out there, even the most advanced military and intelligence agency training out there, was that it was very heavy on skill, and it was light or completely non-existent on the personal side of this. So just imagine, like, if someone taught you just a quick rapport trick, like make good eye contact, just something really simple that you would just find on online somewhere. If you gave that to a guy who's naturally just a socially awkward, just weirdo type of dude, and gave the same piece of advice to somebody who basically had his shit together, they would produce completely different results from the exact same technique. So the technique is not as important as what's going on the inside. So we did a lot of studying and a lot of research to find out what it was that made the difference. And we came up with authority makes the difference. And as far as authority goes, have you heard of the Milgram experiment?
No, I have not.
So this was it's basic in like any psychology course. Anybody who's ever taken psychology has probably heard of this. It took place at Yale. This Dr. Stanley Milgram, to make it really short, he convinced people to shock strangers almost to death just because a man in a lab coat told them that they should continue, they should keep on going. And there's more to it than that, but that was the end result of the experiment, that 80% of people will shock another person to death because a guy in a lab coat told them it was necessary, told them that they should. Wow. And this study has been replicated many times over, including people like Darren Brown in England redone it. I think he's the most recent one, and he's kind of – and you know he's a great showman, so he – had a great backdrop and great setup, and the story was great. But the results almost never change. It's about 80% of people will do that just because a person in perceived authority, the guy had no real authority. There's no name tag that says I'm a doctor on it. There's nothing like that. It's just a guy with really good hygiene, like a good-looking guy in a lab coat, says it's important that you continue. So we dissected that a little further, and – basically the end result that no one really talks about is this unnamed man in a lab coat. If I'm him, I can convince 80% of strangers to commit murder in less than 30 minutes.
Wow.
With no technique. So he's not sitting there using hypnosis. He's not doing rapport development with them. He's not asking them, oh, where are you from? What do you like to do? Let's talk about mountain biking together. None of that stuff is happening. That is all authority, and it's not even real authority. It's just perceived authority. So the way humans react to what authority is almost more important than skill. And in the Ellipsis Manual, we broke it down into five basic factors, and there's a whole long list of how to basically hack your way into authority. And this kind of goes back, like, Justin, you got your start in kind of doing pickup when you first started. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've done your research, I'm guessing.
I was listening to your podcast a few days ago.
Yeah.
And I got started in pickup, too. Well, I got started failing in pickup. I was, like, 19, and I got turned down by this girl. And my friend said, oh, she liked you a couple hours ago. I was like, what? So that night I went home, I got on Google, I was like, how to tell when girls like you. Mm-hmm. And I got obsessed. I got obsessed with body language and profiling. And it all started from just one night out. And I got into this pickup thing, and it was just, I realized over the course of time, I was a psychology major at the time when I was younger. And I realized that all of these, or most of these methods that you learn in pickup, are ways to fake like you're a real good guy. It's like pretending. Mm-hmm. It's like, here, let me give you a list of tips and tactics to look like an alpha male. So it's kind of like spray painting on a six pack.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not real, and it's I would guarantee almost every girl in your audience has had the experience of like talking to a guy, and everything's great. Confidence is there, his posture's there, his great hygiene, he's a good looking dude. But the girl's had the experience of something being off or something doesn't feel right.
Yep.
And that is where I think this authority principle starts to leak out through your physiology. There's a part of your body that's dedicated to memorizing. I'm behind on three of my bills. I've got dishes piling up in the sink. I've got a 6-foot pile of laundry in my bedroom. I forgot to brush my teeth this morning. All of that stuff just starts to accumulate. And it leaks out in your body language. And even though these girls don't have body language training per se, their subconscious is picking up all of these tiny little signals, and they don't know why. They just get a feeling. And that happens in any conversation you could be in, whether it's with another man or a woman or in non-dating situations like a negotiation or a business talk. And once you have that authority, it comes down to the five factors. And once you have those five factors mastered, your body language will be more – I hate to use the word congruent because I think that's overused. But it comes out more natural, and you come out as an authority figure. And having that authority and then stacking on the hypnosis methods, the covert rapport methods, and all the stuff that we put together as a package in the Ellipsis manual – makes it like 50 times more powerful. So the five factors for authority we discussed, or that we discovered, were dominance, discipline, leadership, gratitude, and fun, or just being a fun person. And dominance can be substituted with ambition in a lot of cases. So like the starving artist guy who's not really socially dominant, but he's has a tremendous amount of ambition and drive. So you can substitute dominance in that case. But those are the things that if you lack one of those really fundamental things of just being a man and being just having your shit together and handling your business, if you don't handle your business, other people can see it. And when you start trying to use persuasion, you start trying to use influence, that comes out in your body language. It comes out nonverbally. It comes out in your pupil size, how often you blink. All of that stuff is visible, but other people aren't seeing it and profiling you. They're seeing it and getting a feeling like something isn't right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're not kind of like going through this checklist of like, oh, this guy has this and this. Oh, he's kind of lacking, you know, dominance, but right. He has leadership. Yeah. But no, it's more of like an intuitive thing where they can kind of recognize it. And I think for the most part, I would say, I don't know if you'd agree or not, but I'd say that women are better readers of body language innately than I think men are, just kind of off the bat.
Yes, and that's actually been proven. You're right.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess the question that arises now is, you know, if you don't have these five authority factors, because it seems like authority is kind of the overarching theme here of importance. Like that's kind of the thing you really needed when you want to start, you know, using this persuasion and even manipulation, I guess, in different situations if you had to. But how do you hack into getting these factors down, these authority factors down, if you don't, you know, if you are a shy guy or if you are, you know, nervous around women, if you want to improve your dating life and kind of do that stuff, how do you then, in the quickest way possible, get dominance, discipline, leadership, gratitude, fun?
That's a great question. And the people who have gone through our intelligence course have we've kind of mastered a little system over time, and it basically involves keeping a solid journal and rating yourself every day on the traits or whatever traits you want, even if you don't want these five. There's something else that you have in mind, a different shopping list. Keeping that and journaling that, and start by handling small things in your life and taking right action. That means make your bed when you get up in the morning. That means pay your bills on time. That means get the dishes done. That means mow your yard when you're supposed to mow your yard. Taking care of small things that normal people like your peers usually put off. And those small things will start adding up, and you'll start to get that discipline involved to where you're just doing the right thing all the time. And just those small victories start to increase confidence. And a lot of guys will start with huge things. They'll start with these giant, lofty goals that they're like, oh, I want to be like the coolest guy in the room. I'm like, bro, you got to start somewhere. Or somebody comes up to me and wants a bunch of training, and they say, you know, I want to be able to do a bunch of covert hypnosis. I want to be able to do X, Y, and Z stuff for intelligence operations. Like, I can tell already you don't even make your bed, and you want to control another human being. So it starts with small things, and it starts with handling your business and just getting stuff done. And having authority means how you take care of yourself, and it means just maturity. And that's another thing that kind of goes back to the pickup aspect of it. Like, pickup doesn't exist. Attraction, once you have authority mastered and you've got these qualities mastered and your life's mattered, attraction by the opposite sex being attracted to you is a byproduct of you having your shit together. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
And you can throw the tactics away. But I would say, most importantly, start keeping yourself accountable and start journaling this stuff on a daily basis. And I would say another big step to authority is learning profiling and learning behavior. I remember when I first started reading body language, I just kind of like reached a little peak where I got good at it. I noticed that every human being that I ever saw was suffering in one way or another. And it was sad at first. It was kind of depressing. And you finally realize that suffering is just a human condition. We are all going through something. Everyone in the world, no matter how cool they look, no matter how gorgeous that girl you're talking to is suffering, is fearful, is insecure about stuff. And it's learning behavior profiling, learning body language, and just going through the ellipsis needs map and being able to place somebody and figure out what their needs are, which leads to you automatically know their fears and insecurities if you know what their needs are. For me, when I was like 24, 25 is when I was getting really good at this stuff. It humanizes everyone around you that used to be threatening. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of people that would otherwise, like, I wouldn't want to approach them. Imagine being able to see those people's fears and insecurities, not from a place of higher ground, not like you're looking down on them, because you've got them too. All it does is make you think, wow, this person is just as screwed up or just as vulnerable as I am. So it really does humanize other people and kind of levels the playing field.
Yeah, I love that, man. And you know, going back to what you said a moment ago too, like the attraction is a natural byproduct of getting all these things down, man. I couldn't agree any more than that. I mean, that's totally like when I teach dating advice to guys, that's like everything I teach is working on your core self, being natural, figuring out these areas, you know, the dominance, the leadership, the confidence, etc. But then, like, when you become that man who has these things, women are just going to start coming to you. I mean, not literally coming to you, but when you go out and, you know, you go up to women and start approaching them and talking to them, that attraction is just going to be there. It's not like something you have to manipulate or pretend, like say a pickup artist would. So
absolutely.
I'm totally with you on that. As far as the like getting people off the pedestal thing too, I like that as well, man. Like, it's just humanizing everyone. Like, you see a 10 beautiful, drop dead gorgeous looking woman in the street, you know, and you're a single guy and you're thinking, you know, she's way out of my league. Then you kind of, you know, look into, you learn some of these skills that we're talking about here, the body language, the behavior profiling, the reading people, and you kind of understand that this woman, although she may be beautiful and, you know, seem like a goddess or whatever, she's just like you or anybody else or any of the other women, you know, walking past you, because she, just like you, has these insecurities, has these needs, has these just common problems that human beings have. And when you can, you know, just humanize her, it takes the it takes all like the pressure or all the intense emotions of you not being able to overcome your insecurities about, you know, being less than her or her being better than you. It takes that off the table, I think.
I absolutely agree. And one of the questions that we teach the students to ask themselves is called the X-ray question. It's actually a series of questions here. It's two or three. So the first one is, what makes this person feel significant in the world, which will also expose their fear? And then where are they on the needs map, which is appreciation, approval, acceptance, and all that. And then what makes them feel strong? And just asking them what they like to do and what they're most proud of and what they feel strong doing shows you what their fears are. Just as a byproduct of asking that question, you get their fear and their insecurity. You figure out the opposite of what they're saying. And it is so different when you can really just see through. Everyone you meet is going to lie to you, because you guys are going to learn lie detection. That's part of the book. Everyone you meet is full of shit. Every human you talk to lies. And one of the biggest mistakes a lot of people make when they start learning this is calling people out. Like, yeah, my roommate was lying to me this morning. I called him out. Like, how productive is that? you just got to let it go. But once you start getting good at this profiling, and then you get into the influence part of this, so you use this profiling information. You don't just have it to say, haha, I know something about you that no one else does. But you're using this information, just like a surgeon would take a patient history before you do an operation. And once you get into that mode, or get into that capability to where you can do this stuff and actually do it well, you could, with my book, you could talk someone into actually walking in front of a bus. But once you get to that level, there's nothing holding you back. And since you've been through the process of kind of humanizing everybody around you, it makes you a much more humble human being. Humans are. And we all think we have this kind of firewall between our brain and the outside world, and there isn't one.
Yeah. Two questions. The X-ray questions, is that something you're literally asking the person like in front of you, or is that kind of like a different situation where you'd bring that up? And then also, after that, can you dive into some of the kind of lie detection techniques you use?
Absolutely. The X-ray question are meant to be internal. So you're asking yourself.
Okay, gotcha.
What does this person want to be appreciated for? What questions like, what compliments do they love receiving from their friends? Those kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm. So you literally just kind of – you're having this dialogue internally to kind of profile them, put them into kind of a specific place. All right, got you there.
That's great for the leadership aspect of it, in that, you know, the book Strengths Finder 2.0, I think it's like the most popular business book.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
So it just tells you like how to identify your employees' strengths and what they do really well. And in persuasion and influence, instead of identifying someone's strengths, you need to identify what they feel like they're really good at, even if they suck at it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that what they feel like they're good at, or what they want to be seen as being good at, is more important than what they actually are good at.
I guess, is there any type of questions that you can ask them externally to get these answers to your internal questions that you're asking?
Ask them externally?
Yeah, like I guess when you're asking, like kind of figuring out like where to place them, how to profile them, and you know, position them, when you're having those like X-ray questions internally to yourself, is there any outward questions that you're asking them, maybe like ways to steer them into giving you these types of answers?
Absolutely. And I would say most – I'll give you a couple. But I would say if you're like just a naturally social person, you're having a good conversation – these answers will start becoming extremely obvious very early in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Just from them talking about their job, their friends, their vacations they've been on, the answers will come out. But if you hear like, oh, you work over at Kinko's, awesome. What's the favorite part about working over there? What's the coolest thing about it? Mm-hmm. And then which one of your friends, like you have this social circle of friends, which one are you? Are you like the caretaker, the listener, the complainer? You're the one that like breaks beer bottles in your friend's house. So asking them who they are is not going to give you who they are. It's going to give you who they want to be seen as. And as far as you, go ahead, Justin.
Oh, no. Sorry, man. Did you want to continue with something?
I was going to answer your lie detection question.
All right. I was just going to re-ask it. So cool.
All right. Good timing. I think, I could shave off 6 months of heartache for your guys here with a few mistakes. I think one of the when people first start learning lie detection, they look for deception signals. So if you and Justin, I'll send you. We created the behavioral table of elements, which looks like the periodic table, but it's all body language and behavior, and it's a lie detection chart. It's on one sheet, and I'll send that to you so you can put it in the show notes for everybody to download for free.
Cool. Sounds far more interesting than the periodic table.
I think so too. So that thing, all the way, it's got a list of deception indicators. But looking for deception indicators and training yourself to see deception indicators is not the best route. Training yourself to look for truth signals and honesty is the best way to spot deception, because it will, once you train yourself to see truth, it's 10 times easier to see deception because it stands out.
Cool.
So I would say start with the truth, start with relaxation gestures, and start with people who are happy and comfortable and relaxed.
Hey, gentlemen, have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? Man, I talk about this group all the time, but for good reason. The Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook is the hands-down one collection of like-minded men you have to be a part of. I'm talking about world-class performers here. Authors, podcasters, life coaches, dating coaches, relationship experts, health and fitness experts, nutritionists, doctors. There's so many awesome professionals in this group willing to lend you a hand. And give you advice, give you their best tips and strategies and techniques for mastering life and becoming the best man you can be. And there's thousands of incredible, regular, awesome dudes like yourself in this group as well, who share advice, who share information, who inspire each other and take each other to the next level of becoming the best version of themselves. So join the group right now if you haven't already. I feel like I talk about this all the time, but I love this group. It's so inspiring. It's incredible. You have to be a part of it if you're not a part of it yet. Just ask any one of the thousands of guys who are in this group. We absolutely love it. We talk about it every day. We're involved every day. It's incredible, and I want you to be a part of it too. So go to EliteManMastermind.com. It's going to forward you right to Facebook, or just go to Facebook and type in Elite Man Mastermind. You can join the group that way as well. Either way, I'll see you on the inside, guys. So keep kicking ass and taking names. Okay, so you're basically studying what truth looks like when someone's talking to you, when they're saying something, you know that it's a fact, or you know that they're not lying about anything.
Yes.
That's kind of the picture you're remembering, I guess, for when they're telling something that's truthful. And then when, you know, consequently, when they're lying, something changes in their, you know, their expression, the way they're saying something, maybe their voice goes up, something like that.
Absolutely. And that doesn't just apply on a one-to-one scale. So if you train yourself to look at truth signals from every Starbucks employee, it's going to work equally well. It'll apply to a new person that you've just met, because truth signals are almost universal. We kind of come out of the box with these things programmed into us. And I think you might have been referring to like developing a baseline of behavior, which isn't always necessary. And it's usually not necessary if you know what truth signals really look like and you're comfortable looking at them, comfortable seeing them.
What are some types of truth signals, like smiling, or is it kind of just like a general, I don't know, I guess, way, like a feeling you get when someone's telling you the truth? Is it something like that, or is it like indicators like a smile or, you know, something in their eye?
Someone flashing their eyebrows, their head looking down, tilting their head, yawning, sometimes yawning. Baton gestures, and a baton gesture is when someone is like moving their hand to the beat of their voice. Like Bill Clinton, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. So that's a baton gesture. But that's a comfort gesture. It's not deception. People exposing their palms, figure four, leg crossing. So people crossing their legs is a comfort indicator. There's a ton, hands in pockets, blinking slowly, breathing slowly, locking your fingers, steepling, surprise, head shaking, chin stroking, all of those stuff are just kind of comfortable indicators, like the facial expression of happiness, or just somebody who looks relaxed and has a relaxed appearance. You'll start to see all of these things. But a lot of these things will also help you later on in the program when you're starting to get into like extreme influence and extreme compliance building, because you'll be able to identify people who are highly compliant before you even talk to them. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, you can just kind of, you know, pick out, I guess, what types of things you're going to say, and you kind of already have that rapport built up where it's going to be easier to kind of go from that point forward.
Yes, yes. So, and that's another thing they teach cult recruiters is that's relaxed body language. So they usually teach the cult recruiters to look for the relaxed eye muscles. So people whose eyes are just kind of completely relaxed.
It's funny how crossing your legs, putting your hands in your pockets are seen as like comfortable body language cues, but like crossing your arms is like totally opposite. Right?
Right. I would say crossing your arms would be neutral.
I thought it was more of like an aggressive kind of thing. Like, you know, you get pissed off and you cross your arms.
Right, right. It could be.
Or could be in some situations.
There's different ways. Like someone grabbing their biceps would be maybe a defensive posture. But then imagine somebody crossing their arms with their palms touching their rib cage. So they're kind of hugging themselves. So that would be more of a reassurance gesture. And if you see arm crossing in a cluster with something else, and keep in mind, there's no one gesture that means a person is lying.
Yeah.
So you've got to look for little groups. And the groups of gestures would be – I'll give you a quick list here. Chin thrusting, which is where someone just lift their chin up and expose their throat. Adam's apple jump from swallowing or not swallowing, trying not to swallow. A single-sided shoulder shrug while someone is talking means they don't believe in what they're saying. Clasping the throat, facial touching, genital protection where the hands move in front of the groin. They call this the fig leaf in body language training. Hushing gestures to where the fingers or hands cover the mouth. Finger to nose is a big one. Wrapping your legs around the legs of a chair. Rising in vocal pitch, increasing in speed. When they have a statement or when they answer your questions with no pronouns. So if you ask an open-ended question and like, for instance, what did you do last night? And the person says, well, got out of bed about 7:45, went to the bar, stopped, got gas, went home. There's no pronouns there. So the absence of pronouns is a good one. People who have non-contracted denials is another one. So instead of saying, I didn't rob the store, a liar is more likely to say, I did not rob the store. So they would take out the contraction. Then there's over apologies, over politeness. Like they didn't call you sir the entire interrogation and all of a sudden they say sir. Or they say sorry over and over again for smaller things means that they're lying about a bigger crime that was committed. And there's many confessions. Like so if you're interrogating someone who you have good reason to believe committed a robbery and they confess to smoking a joint a few days ago, that is a mini confession, which means you need to start digging a little bit further. And lastly, I would say chronology is huge, especially if you're asking your friends about something that happened. If there's an emotional content to the story, a truthful person will usually start with the emotional content first. Like Justin, if you got in a huge car accident and you're okay and you called me right away to let me know, what's the first thing you're going to say when I answer the phone?
I'm okay, probably.
Yeah, I'm okay, followed by...
Yeah, the accident. I just got in a big accident.
Just got an accident. You're not going to call me and be like, hey, man, I got up at 10:15 this morning, took a shower, I took my medicine, I had breakfast. So you're not going to go into the story, but usually when there's a dramatic event there and someone's rehearsed a story, they're more likely to tell the story in exact chronological order. Mm-hmm. And a good way to tell if they're lying or not, we can recall truthful events backwards, but a rehearsed story, they haven't rehearsed it backwards and it's not truthful. So they'll have a way harder time telling what they did in reverse order.
Interesting, man. Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of these. These are really cool.
No, thanks.
So I guess going back to the overall theme of sort of the episode here, which is the Manchurian candidate taking someone and you know, being able to talk them into walking in front of a bus, which, by the way, I'm going to get to soon in a few moments of, you know, the dangers of this type of thing. But before that, what's it is like? Yeah, how does this go down? Like, I mean, we got the authority, we have the rapport, we're you know, talking to them, we're seeing if they're, we have the lie detection thing kind of going down as well, but we're figuring out all that kind of stuff. And but I'm trying to wrap my head around the being able to convince someone, or even, you know, convince them to give you $20, which I know people, you know, you see bums on the street, you see homeless people on the street, you see people begging for money, and you know, so many people are walking past them, they don't even want to give them a quarter. It just blows my mind that you can talk someone into giving you $20, or even worse, talking someone into, you know, jumping in front of a bus. Like, how does that, how right. do you go from this kind of stuff to that next level where you're literally like controlling their mind and taking over?
There's no when you're looking at a person who's under control, I guess is a good word for it, there's no transition, like there's no line they cross. But the overall, I would say the way the conversation works is you start developing that focus, interest, curiosity, then you start developing a behavior profile, then you're going to start using behavioral gesturing techniques that we have in the book, then you're going to start controlling your blinking, your breathing, the types of words you say, the emphasis you put on words. I'm sure you've heard of embedded commands before. Mm-hmm. You're going to be using a lot of that stuff. You're going to be using linguistics. You're going to be telling stories about a friend of yours whose first name starts with the same letter as the person you're talking to. Then there's tons of stories about scarcity. And then this, and you're gradually talking this person into a hyper-compliant state. So you're basically building gradual compliance. And all of this while demonstrating authority naturally, not demonstrating it by tactics or doing anything, just by your natural behavior. The way you breathe, the way you speak to this person is all demonstrating authority by itself. So there's no need to continue to demonstrate it. And then through this compliance, then you're using age regression. You're using interruptions, so you're interrupting them. During things you want them to see as negative, you're doing things that trigger the negative parts of their brain, like making accidental foot contact with them under the table. You're using a ton of confusion statements. And we go into confusion statements a lot. So basically, are you familiar with how they work?
Confusion statements? No, I haven't heard of that.
So if you have a person that's drowning or trying to tread water unsuccessfully, let's say, their brain goes into a mode of survival. So as soon as they start kind of flipping out a little bit, the first solid object that their hand comes in contact with, they will grab automatically during that phase because of their confusion. And the brain operates in much the same way, in that when you confuse someone to a certain degree, the first logical thing that comes out of your mouth afterwards is automatically soaked up and absorbed by the unconscious part of the brain.
That's interesting. How would you go about like confusing them? How does that work?
There are several confusion statements that we use. So basically, a confusion statement is something you would use in a conversation that sounds normal. And right after the confusion statement, you would automatically throw something in right after that. So a very, very simple confusion statement is right after you and I were talking, imagine in the middle of a conversation, someone said, and it's amazing how most people don't even really recognize what they're not considering or thinking about right now. And before you have time to process that, right when your brain is in that confusion mode, trying to process what that means, the statement that comes after it, or the command that comes after it, is automatically soaked up. And that's just one of the things that we do. And when we talk about age regression, this gets as far detailed as to expose someone to the smell of sunscreen or Play-Doh during the conversation, depending on how vital this this conversation is and how much you need to get done. And then after all of this regression and confusion and interruption, there is a gradual programming process going on to where you're at gaining gradual compliance, to where you end up with a point we call hyper compliance. And in the hyper-compliant state, they're ready for what we call an activation or a call to action, as a marketer would call it. And you're basically delivering the final product and telling them what they need to do.
Wow, that is incredible, man. So how long does this entire process take, I guess? I'm sure it would vary, but generally speaking.
I would say you could get most – if you read through the book, you can see all the methods in there can probably be done within an hour, hour and a half. Or you could shorten some of them if you're in Starbucks and you just want to get a free coffee. So you can kind of compact it or stretch it as much as you need.
How long would it take to get a free coffee?
About 40 seconds.
Can you walk us through that? I mean, that's pretty cool, man.
I would like to say there's this very specific technique, but having the ability to just walk up and get a free coffee relies on your ability to do profiling and read the person you're talking to, have the authority already completely mastered, and then use some of those confusion statements. So you basically would walk up, you do what we call an autopilot break. Because the cashier at Starbucks, or the barista, I think they're called, is in what we call an autopilot mode. So she's dealing with a customer. So when you think of an autopilot, think of like a role that a person is in. So she deals with customers all day long. And before you walk up, you're the next customer. And you have to break that in order to establish focus. And focus is the primary first step. So you have to break the autopilot with if you're in America and you walk up and order a coffee in an Australian accent, you've automatically broken the autopilot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And that's followed immediately by a confusion statement and a command to give you free coffee, but not in that way.
How would it come across? So it's not too aggressive, I guess.
It would usually take place in the form of a story. So you would have a bunch of commands hidden in the story. So I'll give you an example. I took my son to Walgreens this morning. I was talking to this pharmacist. I didn't know what to give him. And this pharmacist gave me this new medicine. It was a Walgreens brand, of course. And they were like, give it to him. It's fine. And I was really worried about this, but they said it's completely fine. Just give it to him. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So that statement would come right after a confusion statement to get some free coffee.
Is that the confusion statement then?
No, a confusion statement would be so if you were in Starbucks trying to use a confusion statement, it would have to be very quick and it would have to be right after. So it can't be in the middle of a conversation. So asking a question like, which direction is northeast, and acting really urgent about it while the barista is processing that information and trying to figure out which way the store faces is when you would start telling that story.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So the confusion statement can just be something totally random, and just to kind of get her off track again and mess her up, and then you go into sort of the storytelling.
Yep, and that's it. And the story just is basically just a vehicle to deliver all of those little word groups for her to soak up.
And then at what point does the coffee question get brought up? Or is it more of a statement like, give me a coffee?
Right at the end, I would say if she starts doing that, you could use the word, it's fine, and then put your hand out towards, not towards her, but towards the register, like you're telling someone to stop. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you say, it's fine, hand goes out towards the register, like you're telling her to stop, and then say, can I just have this one for free? Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Cool. That's pretty cool, man.
So you've used, in less than 60 seconds, you've used 20 different psychological techniques.
Yeah.
And it works. It works pretty frequently, but you've got to, what's really important to understand, a lot of people think that you can just kind of get a couple of tactics and then go perform this without any practice. But it's kind of like if I gave you a 2-paragraph description on how to perform an appendectomy, I don't think anybody could do it.
Yeah.
And it comes with practice, and it comes with lots of training. And that's why with the Ellipsis Manual is just jam-packed with information. I wanted it to be no fluff, just jam-packed to where you could highlight on every page. And we released, or we're about to release, a training planner that goes along with the Ellipsis manual that's got weekly tasks. It's got exact specific goals, what you need to be doing every week. So like spending an entire week just watching on whether or not someone's pupils are dilating or constricting, and spending the next week on just watching people's fingers and whether or not they contract or expand based on what's being said in the conversation. So to get good at this, it takes time. And I would say there is – people want to learn pickup. People want to learn profiling skills, and it's hard to distill it in such a tiny time frame. And learning profiling or learning extreme levels of influence is like learning to play the piano. So think about the different types of people who play piano. There's the guy who goes on YouTube – and like watches a couple videos, and then he can trick people into thinking he knows a few songs. Then there's the guy who has studied for a little while, and you can definitely tell the difference between those two people. And so there are no once you're talking about like deep level influence to where you can talk someone into doing something that's not in their best interest, you're getting into like a surgical level of training there. And that those people who promise like learn how to read body language in 3 days, it's absolute bullshit. Mm-hmm. That it takes time. It's like if you saw an ad, learn how to be a heart surgeon in 6 weeks. It's almost laughable. But the body language is so understudied that some people fall for those gimmicks and stuff online.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. What's more of like a realistic kind of time frame to actually be able to really get good at this, or maybe like practically implement this into your daily life?
I would say practical implementation, 1 month. Nursing degree level is, I would say, a 6 months. And surgical level, I'd say about a year to a year and a half.
Cool.
We'll stick with the medical metaphors.
Yeah. Is there anything you're still learning in this field?
Yes. We are working on some new psychographic type indicators, or PTI. And we're trying to be able to identify fears on a sharper level, fears and weaknesses and insecurities. And as far as body language goes, I still journal about it. I still go back through my own training program. So, for instance, this week is focusing on whether or not people are breathing from their chest or their abdomen. And I have a reminder on my phone that comes on like every 45 minutes to remind me to pay attention to that.
What's the benefit of knowing that?
People breathe into their stomachs when they're very relaxed and open. And that's actually one of the tricks in the book. When you can force someone to have body language that's relaxed, their brain will follow suit. Their brain will automatically follow suit. So if I can talk about, like, Justin, I know you pride yourself on being like a successful podcast host. And if I told you that I read an article about how they studied successful people, and they said the nonverbal communication styles of all of them was that 99% of them breathed into their stomach even while they were under stress. Just me saying that, it's not true, but just me saying that would force you to start thinking about breathing into your stomach, which would automatically start making you have relaxed body language with me without me having to do anything. I'm manipulating your brain by talking about your body.
Is there any other manipulation techniques you've used on me throughout this interview?
I don't think so. I don't know. A lot of them come out automatically. I don't think I have.
No, I appreciate that. So what's the way, I guess, what's the correct way of breathing? Isn't it like through the diaphragm, or is there something else?
Yeah. The diaphragm is what you're breathing into when you basically like fill your belly with air. So if you watch somebody who's sleeping, their belly will go up and down, not their chest. And our chest tends to go up and down because of anxiety or fear or just being stressed out. So our shoulders go up and our head goes down a little bit, and we breathe through our chest the more stressed out we are. And the more relaxed we are, like if I gave you morphine right now, you'd start breathing in your stomach automatically. So the more relaxed a person is, the more they'll breathe into their stomach.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. So you can kind of just – I guess when it comes to this, it's a good way to get them to be more compliant, build up like a comfort level with you when you can get them to breathe through their diaphragm, through their stomach.
Yes, and that's just talking about how you read an article about how different people are authentic, or some celebrity was just really authentic, and how you love meeting authentic people. If you have authority, that person you're speaking to will automatically start acting more authentic around you.
Another thing I think I've heard in kind of I just want to hear your take on this, but it's like you tell something to someone, and I think it might have been on the Chris Voss interview where he might have mentioned this, or it might have been something else, but Chris Voss was an FBI negotiator, really cool guy.
Yeah.
But he was like, you know, you tell someone they're really, really kind, or they're too generous. That's what he said. They're like too generous. And by saying that, they start actually, it was in a negotiation setting, like buying a car or something. You're like, oh, you know, you're too generous. You're too nice. And by saying that, you actually get them to live up to that expectation, and they start being more generous, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a fantastic one. They teach at interrogation school. Like telling someone they're really honest and you appreciate how honest they are before they even start the interview, and how much honor and integrity you start complimenting people on that. But that all works backwards to it all kind of falls back to the Robert Cialdini, principle of consistency. They wanted money for this homeless shelter. And they did this study. They would walk around the neighborhood and say, hey, will you give us money for this homeless shelter? And everybody's like, no, see you later. And they'd shut their door. So they went to a different neighborhood and just took a survey. So they knocked on doors and they asked people, say, hey, we just have a one question survey. Do you support people helping the homeless? And the people, of course, everybody's going to say, yeah, sure. Of course I support that. And then 3 weeks later, different people went by those houses, knocked on their doors, and they were 88% more likely to get money from those people just because they had committed to it 2 weeks prior.
Yeah, it's like the foot in the door effect, I think it's called too. Like once you get your foot in the door, it's like so much easier for them to let you in or whatever. Chase, just a couple more questions, man. I know your time's precious. We got to kind of wrap things up.
Sure. But yeah,
just a couple questions, man. What is your biggest, or what are some of your biggest fears, and like how do you deal with those?
Biggest fears. I would say some of the biggest fears I don't really have any social. Are you talking about social fears?
Yeah, I guess like social fears in general. I'm just thinking like, you know, you seem like a well put together, very relaxed and nothing gets you thrown off track kind of guy. I'm just kind of wondering like if you ever face like social fears or different things that kind of bother you and how you deal with those.
Absolutely. I for a very long time, and it still hits me on occasion today. Have you heard of imposter syndrome?
Yeah, of course.
I think I'm the number one recognized behavior expert or body language expert in the entire country. And to this day, I think, you know, any day now, somebody's going to come along and say, oh, they're going to figure out I've been faking it the whole time. And my book's the number one bestseller. And still, even now, I think, wait, did I really do all of this? Did I really accomplish all of this? And it kind of, the way that I deal with it, the way I used to deal with it is like just talking to friends. So they would just tell me something positive. And nowadays I just churn it out no matter what. And I think I've grown to a point where, I've just realized that there's going to be haters no matter what. There are people that hate Mother Teresa and there's people that hate Oprah. You're not going to win. You're not going to win over everybody. So I've kind of just gotten over it. And I can't imagine when I start feeling insecure about that kind of stuff, I imagine people like Donald Trump's kids who get messages from disgusting, like hateful people on Twitter, whether or not you support the guy, like his children get that kind of stuff. Or like a talk show host who gets just nasty, 1,000 nasty emails a day from people saying, I hope you die and stuff. And I got to deal with a 3-star review on Amazon on occasion. So that's like my big stressful event. So I think perspective is huge for me. And just letting go and just surrendering to what's happening and just knowing that we're going to be dead. Everybody who's alive right now is all going to be dead real soon. So we don't have very long.
Cool. I like that, man. What are the like applications, or where are some of the wide places that you could use the skills we've talked about throughout this episode? Like, I'm thinking sales, I'm thinking negotiation, I'm thinking obviously pickup, dating women kind of stuff. Is there anything else that this kind of these skills can be applied to?
I think we designed it to be applied in an intelligence aspect, and it just turned out to be a book that is kind of widely applicable. Dating, definitely. Interrogation, for sure. And I think any time you just want to understand people, even if you're not trying to talk them into something or get them to do something, this stuff is applicable universally. Now, I didn't want to target a universal market. I really wanted to target a niche, but I didn't know who to target. But I think it's especially helpful in a therapeutic context, to where if I have a system that can talk someone into creating an alternate personality, how fast could I help somebody with depression? And that's what I really want to do with it.
And I wanted to mention that as well. How do you deal with like the dangers of this? Like when you're teaching this kind of stuff, when you wrote the book, when you go on different podcasts, different interviews, how do you feel like knowing that you have such a powerful technique here? And, you know, the bad guys obviously are always listening. They're always trying to figure out ways to get ahead and you know, rip people off and things like that. What do you think about, you know, the fact that other people, not just the good guys, but also the bad guys listening to this type of thing? What do you think about that?
I would say, and especially in the book, and it's not, I do want to say that the book really does have the Manchurian Candidate stuff in there, and it does get into a very dark, dangerous place. But I think that it's capable of doing well, and it's capable of people using it for good. And I think that kind of makes me a weapons manufacturer, mm-hmm. to where I think 99% of people are going to use it for good, and a couple of guys are going to go to Walmart and buy a gun and use it to do stupid shit.
Yeah. I mean, you just hope for the best, but it's you know, it's up to, I guess, the good of the world to overtake or outweigh the bad people that do exist. But I mean, there's nothing you can do to really prevent that. At the end of the day, you just gotta hope for the best, and hope that the good guys, I guess, you know, win out at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I had a friend who was deeply, for some reason, deeply concerned that there was going to be this mass stream of serial rapists going around the country, and the book teaches you how to create amnesia and just erasing memories of what they're doing. And it just seemed ridiculous to me, but I guess it's probably one person will do it. I'm sure it'll happen.
Yeah. And you know what? I do honestly believe that for the most part, human beings are good. Like the majority, like you said, 99% of people that read this book are going to be good. You know, they're going to use it for good purposes. And, you know, unfortunately there is that 1% of people, but you know, like I said, the good outweighs the bad. And I mean, this stuff is all, so I'm going to get the book myself. So the Ellipsis Manual, definitely checking it out, guys. If you want to get the book, go to elitemanmagazine.com or just, you know, check out Chase's site for sure. But we'll have it up in the show notes at Elite Man Magazine if you want to check it out. But, Chase, man, I really appreciate your time. I learned a ton, and this is just, you know, some of the most fascinating stuff I like. I mean, I'm just on the edge of my seat here throughout the entire interview, and you know, I had a blast just being able to pick your brain. But as a send-off message, what is the what's a takeaway message you want to leave our audience, and then of course a place that our listeners can check out more about your work?
I would say the takeaway message: we rise by lifting others. And you can find my work on just Google Chase Hughes or go to ellipsisbehavior.com.
All right. Chase, again, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really do appreciate it, and I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Justin. Take care.
So Chase was kind enough to give the Elite Man audience an exclusive discount on all his products, excluding, I think, just an Elite membership product he has on there. But all the other products on his site have a 45% off discount, and just use the coupon code ELITEMAN when you go to check out. So he's got personal training on there. He's got an incredible webinar that he's done, and other little products as well where he talks manipulation, influence, mind control, etc. Really great stuff. I checked it out myself, and I'm really excited that Chase was able to give us that discount. So 45% off at checkout. Just use the coupon code ELITEMAN. Also, I wanted to mention you can pick up his best-selling book, The Ellipsis Manual, right on Amazon. I got the link in the show notes as well. And also the website. I know ellipsis behavior might be a little tough to spell if you guys are like me at all. So you can click right on the elitemanmagazine.com show notes to access either the book on Amazon or his products, which you can get a 45% off discount on. And one final announcement that I mentioned last week in the episode with Dr. Dale Bredesen, that I was launching the official Elite Man podcast supplement line, and that in today's episode I'd be sharing what the name was going to be. So I haven't shared the name with anybody else save for a few very close friends, and I wanted to announce it here first. So the official name of our supplement line for both the Elite Man podcast and Elite Man magazine is Elite Life Nutrition. That's right. Elite Life Nutrition is going to be the official supplement line, supplement brand for the Elite Man podcast and Elite Man magazine going forward. Really, really excited about this. If you haven't listened to last week's episode where I talked to Dr. Dale Bredesen about Alzheimer's and curing all cognitive diseases, check it out now. It's a phenomenal episode. And in the episode as well, I mention a lot of information and dive into the supplement line and the upcoming release of it. So we have our first product coming out in just a few weeks. Again, I'm really excited about it. We're going to have all natural, all organic products. And yeah, listen to last week's episode if you haven't. I don't want to dive too much into it in this episode, as I did mention it last week. But going forward in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have all the information you need and exactly where you can go to get our products out. But really excited about it. Elite Life Nutrition. We're going to have our own supplement line, our own products, the highest quality possible. Make sure you check out last week's episode if you haven't yet. And I'll talk to you soon, guys.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.